This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Song of Solomon. Today, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Song of Solomon, chapters 5 through 8.
A son asked his father the inevitable question, "Dad, where do babies come from?" Well, the father figured it was time for the talk. And so he explained the birds and the bees to his son. Well, when the talk was over, the little boy, he looks up at his dad and he asks, "Dad, does God know about this?" Well, the Song of Solomon proves that yes, God knows about sex. Sex is not Hollywood's invention. It was God's idea. Genesis 1 verse 27 tells us that when God created the male and the female, he instructed them to become one flesh, a Hebrew euphemism for sexual intercourse. And whatever God creates, God commands. He has guidelines for every area of our life, including sexual expression. You know, you can make a trip down to the local bookstore and you'll find countless sex manuals from the so-called sexperts. But there's only one instruction manual from the authority, from God, the Creator. God designed sexual expression, and he tells us how to experience maximum intimacy and enjoyment in the Song of Solomon. Well, as you remember from last time, chapters 2 and 3, Solomon's bride, the Shulamite, she flashed back to her country courtship, to Solomon's proposal, and to their honeymoon. The king had come for her in his palanquin, a mobile honeymoon cottage, as it were. It was a covered couch carried on poles by strong men. The couple made love from Lebanon, from the mountains, all the way down to Jerusalem. And in chapter 4, where we are tonight, we eavesdrop in on the lovers' intimate conversation. In verse 1, Solomon speaks to his bride. "Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes behind your veil." Notice, Shula is wearing a veil. In other words, sexy lingerie. An old pastor friend said to a young pastor, Charlie Shedd, he said, "Son, you've got to save money somewhere. But there are two places where you should never cut back. Never try to save money on food or your wife's lingerie." And I agree. Men, a woman will act sexy if she feels sexy, and she'll feel sexy if she looks sexy. So sell your car. Refinance your house. Put off shoes for the kids. But whatever you do, don't cut back on your wife's lingerie budget. Kathy knows that she has unlimited funds for sexy lingerie. Well, Solomon continues by complimenting her hair. He says, "Your hair is like a flock of goats going down from Mount Gilead." Now, imagine standing off at a distance and watching a single file line of black-haired goats heading down a mountainside. That's what he's getting at. It would look like locks cascading down the temples of her head. Now, fellas, hair like goat's hair may not mean as much to your wife as it did to the Shulamite. You might have to come up with a suitable translation here. But here's what I want you to catch from this. Solomon can spin a phrase. You know, tragically, some husbands are all hands. But notice, Solomon knows how to touch his wife with words rather than just paw all over her. For a whole chapter, Solomon is going to sexually arouse his wife by whispering compliments in her ear. Gentlemen, take notes. Solomon's talk and his tenderness, then his touch, worked to bring the Shulamite to sexual satisfaction. Now he continues here in verse 2. He says, "Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which have come up from the washing, every one of which bears twins, and none is barren among them." Baby, you got beautiful teeth. You had a great orthodontist when you were a kid. "Your lips are like a strand of scarlet and your mouth is lovely. Now notice, you don't come up with this kind of imagery on the spur of the moment. At least most of us don't. I mean, obviously here, Solomon has given some time and some effort, some advanced thought and preparation to come up with this kind of wording. He says, your temples behind your veil are like a piece of pomegranate. In a disarming and in a very gentle manner, Solomon here is moving in under the veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory, on which hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. Solomon compliments his wife on her jewelry. He compares her neck to a weapons depot. Baby, you got a lot of hardware. Notice, men, Solomon is working his way down her body. Working his way down. Verse 5, he whispers, your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle which feed among the lilies. Fawns are perky and youthful. He says, until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, I will go my way to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. And I'll just let you guess what he means by mountain of myrrh and hill of frankincense. He does say, though, until the day breaks. Man, they'll save sleep for another night. Now, men, don't make a mistake here. You are watching a skilled lover at work. Notice, guys, he doesn't just jump right in and go for the big splash. He moves slowly and gently, lovingly lingering over every inch of her body. He shows some self-restraint here. Guys, what an incredible concept. Self-restraint. This is what he shows. And he takes his time to tell his wife how beautiful she is to him. Now in verse 8, he says, come with me from Lebanon, my spouse. With me from Lebanon. She's been thinking about her home back in Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Senir, from Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the lepers. You know, recall just a few days earlier, they were in Lebanon. And here Solomon senses that her mind is wandering. And so what does he do? He addresses her concerns. You know, sometimes before a wife is ready for sex, she first needs to talk. And so discuss her day. How are the kids doing? A wise husband resists the urge to just get on with it. Solomon says in verse 9, you have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes than all spices. Your lips, O my spouse, drip as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. It's a pretty passionate kiss, I think. Evidently, the Hebrews knew about this kind of kissing long before the French took credit for it. In verse 12, Solomon compares the Shulamite sexuality to a garden. He says, a garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. You see, while she was single, the gates to her garden had been sealed shut. But now on their wedding night, they've swung open to Solomon. And he's being invited to enter into the garden and enjoy its delights. In fact, he takes us on a tour here in verse 12. He says, your plants are like an orchid of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, fragrant henna with spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices, a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, and streams from Lebanon. You know, understand, gardens in the Middle East were more than just a couple of rows of tomatoes. Those gardens were like an oasis in the desert. You see, these were private gardens that were cultivated behind thick, tall walls. Inside the walls, there were springs and there were waterfalls. There were trees and flowers and aromatic blossoms. Paths would weave their way through these oriental gardens. Along the walkways, there were little private coves where you could sit down in the grass and you could relax and enjoy the shade. It was all an effort to take in the scents and the sights. These were places that were safe and exclusive and were for your enjoyment. And then even on occasion, the desert winds would sort of blow through the garden and they would lift the scents above the walls and would make the garden enjoyable for those that were outside. Well, you see, prior to marriage, the Shulamite was a garden enclosed. The gates were barred. Before marriage, this garden was full of spices and sweets, but it was owned by the Shulamite alone. But on her wedding night, she invites Solomon to enter her garden. She even whispers to him in verse 16. She says, "Awake, O north wind, and come, O south. Blow upon my garden that its spices may flow out." This is pretty sexy language. She's saying, tonight, someone from outside the garden is going to enjoy its pleasures. Now, what a priceless, special gift to be able to give your spouse one day. I hope every single person desires to give this same special treasure to their future spouse. Make sure that your garden remains a garden enclosed. And then she adds, "Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its pleasant fruits." Notice again, she's not just tolerating sex here, she's enticing. She's egging him on. She wants him to arouse her passion and to bring her to satisfaction. Always remember, the goal of sex is the mutual fulfillment of both partners. Husbands and wives should be givers, not just takers. The best sex is joint satisfaction. Now, chapter 5, verse 1 tells us how Solomon responded to her sexual advances. He says, "I have come to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk." Obviously, he's accepted her invitation and his hunger has been quenched. Now, many Bible commentators believe that the next line is actually the voice of God putting his stamp of approval on the sex that has been shared between the marriage of Solomon and the Shulamite. The line reads, "Eat, O friends, drink, yes, drink deeply, O beloved ones." It's as if God is saying, "Yes, come, this is good." Remember from the very beginning, God said that it was good. You know, honeymoons are wonderful times. Sadly, though, there comes a point when the bliss of the honeymoon ends and the duties of the married life begin. You know, here's a list of a few ways to identify when the honeymoon is over. The dog brings your slippers and your wife barks at you. The honeymoon is over. He finds out he married a big spender and she finds out she didn't. The honeymoon is over. She stops making a fuss over her husband and starts fussing with him. The honeymoon's over. The honeymoon's over when the bride goes from saying, "I do," to saying, "You'd better." Well, here in chapter 5, verse 2, we learn that the honeymoon is over for Shlomo and Shula. In fact, the Shulamite has a dream that warns her about some bad attitudes that are creeping into her relationship with Solomon. She says here in verse 2, "I sleep, but my heart is awake." In other words, I'm dreaming. This is a dream she has. "It is the voice of my beloved." He knocks, saying, "Open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one. For my head is covered with dew, my locks with the drops of the night." Solomon is getting home late from work. It must have been the wee hours of the morning because his clothes are soaked with the dew. And he wants into the queen's bedroom to initiate intimacy. But she rebuffs him. In verse 3, she offers some really lame excuses. Ladies, please don't try these. "I have taken off my robe. How can I put it on again?" And Solomon's thinking, "Baby, don't worry about that robe. With what I've got in mind, your robe is the last thing that you'll need." She says again, "I have washed my feet. How can I defile them?" All of a sudden, she's got a clean foot fetish. I can't get out of bed. I already washed my feet. Another flimsy excuse. Here's what's happening. She's gotten lazy. Here's a wife who just doesn't want to be bothered. You know, at times, a wife gets tired. There's times when she doesn't feel particularly sexy, but she can still give herself to her husband. She can bless him because she loves him. You know, there is a lot in marriage for both husbands and wives that doesn't always excite us at all times, but we do it anyway, don't we? Because it makes a statement to our spouse. It assures them of our love, and it keeps the marriage healthy, and it's important that we do it. Well, the Shulamite recalls here in verse 4, "My beloved put his hand by the latch of the door, and my heart yearned for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the lock." It was an Oriental custom for a lover to leave a pouch of spice or perfume at the opening of the room. "I opened my beloved for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone." In other words, by the time the Shulamite had sort of checked her attitude and decided to open the door to let Solomon in, he was gone. She says, "My heart leaped up when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer." What's happened here? Solomon has been spurned. His fragile male ego has been crushed. And ladies, let me emphasize, fragile male ego. It's very fragile. And she realizes he's been hurt. And so she races out into the streets to find him and to apologize. Hey, I want to say this to you ladies. Please hear me, because I am convinced that the vast majority of women don't understand how important sex is to their husband. Ladies, let me ask you a question. How many wives desire conversation with their husbands? Probably all of you. How many of you would think that there would be something terribly wrong in your marriage if conversation were lacking? Probably all of you. Well, wives, hear this. Sex is to a husband what conversation is to a wife. Ladies, when the world beats him down, when his boss mistreats him, when he pulls up short of his goals, sex is your tool to prop up his confidence and assure him that to you, he is still the most desirable guy in the world. One author puts it, "Sex is a confidence booster, a solace for injured pride, a psychological upward thrust when his soul cries out for a lift." You see, a sensitive woman can use her sensual charms to pump air back into her husband's deflated sails. Through sex, she can make everything right in his world, at least for a few moments. She encourages his manhood. And ladies, even when you do have to turn him down, remember that fragile male ego, and please do it gently. One author writes this, "When you have to reject your spouse's sexual advances, do it as softly as you can. When a husband is turned down, he may fall down, not just for missing out on a moment of pleasure, but his manhood gets rejected. An affirmation can make the rejection less painful. I just can't get with it tonight, honey, but I know I won't be able to stay away from a man like you for long." Well, that eases him down a little more gently. And make sure those rejections, please make sure those rejections are few and far between. 1 Corinthians 7 tells us that our bodies are not our own. Paul writes in verse 4 there, "The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does." Therefore, verse 5, "Do not deprive one another." And the reason, he says, "so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Every married couple needs to understand that sex should be three things. It should be fun, it should be fulfilling, and perhaps most importantly, it should be frequent. Well, verse 7 tells us, "The watchmen who went about the city found me. They struck me, they wounded me. The keepers of the walls took my veil away from me. Now, the queen would have never been tortured in real life. Remember, though, this was a dream. What's happening here is that she feels so guilty that it's caused her to have this nightmare. Her neglect and her selfishness have tortured her conscience. She says, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am lovesick. She puts the maidens on the lookout. If they see Solomon, tell him, I'm sick with love. She wants to patch things up. You know, before we go further, we do need to look at this from a spiritual parallel. For how often have you and I spurned the advances of Jesus? How often have we been too tired to pray or to read our Bibles or to get alone and spend time with Him? How often have we been reluctant to get up and to obey when the Lord laid a particular command on our heart? I think some of us also need to apologize to the lover of our soul, to our Lord Jesus. Well, the daughters of Jerusalem, they sing in verse 9, what is your beloved more than another beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved that you so charge us? In other words, why is your husband so special? And it sets the Shulamites up for her response here in verse 10. She says, my beloved is white and ruddy, chief among 10,000. This is why I love him so. This is why he's so special. Now, keep in mind that a sexual chill has sort of settled over the Shulamite's marriage. She needs to thaw out and warm up to her husband again. And she does this in three ways. The first thing she does is she develops a new attitude toward her husband's body. A new attitude toward her husband's body. In other words, she makes a change in her thinking. She begins to think of her husband sexually. Listen to her now in verse 10. My beloved is white and ruddy. The word ruddy there means healthy, robust, virile. She calls him chief among 10,000. And then she begins to describe him. His head is like the finest gold. His locks are wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are like a bed of spices, banks of scented herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. His hands are rods of gold set with beryl. His body is carved ivory, inlaid with sapphires. Now notice, she's fantasizing about his strong hands. And she actually envisions his torso in her mind. Now notice this. So far in their relationship, only Solomon has described the body of his spouse. But now the Shulamite bride is describing Solomon's body. Notice what's happening here. She's training her mind to think sexually about her husband. And she too starts with the hair and works her way down. In fact, she gets down to the ivory portion of his body. That's the area where the sun never shines. It just stays white all the time. And the sapphire inlays are the blood vessels running underneath the skin. She says in verse 15, his legs are pillars of marble set on bases of fine gold. In other words, she's turned on by the strength of his legs. I mean, he's got sexy calves. His countenance is like Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. In other words, eat your heart out, girls.
From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights, and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.